This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Now, we are joined by our wonderful guest, Tswamandla Mhlongo, who, as I said, is a senior programs officer at the Democracy Development Program. And he is at the forefront of implementing impactful projects that enhance the capacity of community-based organizations and foster meaningful interaction with local municipalities in the KwaZulu-Natal province. He also represents the Democracy Development Program in various forums and conferences, bringing crucial issues to the force. Tswamandla is not only a seasoned project manager and facilitator, but also a skilled content designer. His work focuses on capacity building for community-based organizations, improving local government participation, and mentoring community activists. With a sense of experience as community and process facilitator, he has a keen interest in media communications, public participation, and election management. Beyond his hands-on work, Tswamandla has co-authored publications on local government and civil society's role in elections. He has collaborated with the Maurice Webb Race Relations Unit at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and served as an editor for a series of publications examining South Africa's socio-political trajectory. His insights have made him a sought-after guest, contributor, and analyst on various media platforms. And he's also deeply engaged in regional integration and policy alignment, working with the African Peer Review Mechanism and the Pan-African Parliament. Today, we are thrilled to have him, and he's going to be talking to us about his experience and his perspective on the upcoming elections. So, Tswamandla, welcome to the Hlangana Imade Show. How are you today?
Hi, Kanya. I'm well, thanks. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. So, let's jump right into it. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey and how you've come to your current role with the Democracy Development Program?
Yeah. So, I was studying LLB about 10, 12 years ago at UKZN, and thought about what my next trajectory would look like. I figured out quite quickly that I wasn't made for the legal practice as traditionally would have been thought of, but I thought, how is my contribution to the country going to be meaningful? And of course, started mid-studies to try and get some meaningful sort of vacation work, and DDP is an organization that I've seen and in their work in developing sort of young leadership in particular, and I thought maybe I'd be an interesting fit there. Of course, started off as a project assistant, and of course have made it into the space where I'm now managing a lot of the elections-related work. And I think that's been the trajectory of my career as an athlete.
And then what inspired you to get focused specifically on the capacity building and community-based organizations and, you know, working with government, stuff like that?
Yeah, so you see a lot of activism and community leaders. They have a lot of passion for the things that they do, the issues that they confront at community level. But it seems that there's a disconnect between what they're passionate about and what they can actually execute when it comes to the skills that they have access to, as well as the networks that they have access to. So in terms of dealing with capacity, my thing was, how do I bridge the knowledge gap between what community leaders and activists are passionate about versus what the sort of legislation, the laws, the policies of various local government institutions and government in general can be able to actually make happen. So if you're asking for water, which department are you going to? Is it the municipality? Is it provincial government? Who has the best access and ability to make things work for you in your local environment? I feel like a lot of the information is very sort of bureaucratic and very sort of people don't generally have a real understanding of it. And so ultimately, their passion dies along the way without their communities getting the services that they need as a result of that. So the frustration boils over and they end up burning stuff, even in instances where it could be a relatively easy solve if the bureaucracy wasn't as intense as it is.
Yes, I can imagine that being very, very frustrating. So then can you share some of the most rewarding projects you've worked on during your time with the DDP, specifically with community-based organizations?
Yeah. So part of the work we've been able to do has helped certain communities. On the one hand, we've had a project partner who's been able to get a community library, for instance, in the township of Elindelani. They processed it for it. They marched for it, but ultimately what led to the community library being established was consistent work on the sort of bureaucratic side. They had to write petitions, they had to make sure that they engage all of the right leadership stakeholders in the municipality itself. And so that was one successful one, particularly because it was led by young people. And so part of that complaint in that community was that there are a number of high schools in the area, but there aren't any local or easily accessible libraries where students can go and study. And so if we're interested in improving the quality of education, specifically for township schools, if we're interested in ensuring that the outcomes of that education system secure a brighter future for young people, we need to make sure that we have all of the building blocks of ensuring that they have access to those things. Of course, on the other side, the involvement of community-based organizations on community structures such as clinic committees, where clinics are available, but they're not necessarily working to the standard that the community expects. All generally communities would have had in the past was just a suggestion box, but no follow-ups about the quality and feedback from those suggestion boxes. So in an area called St. Gwendolyn in South Water, Kwasandi, we were able to do capacity building workshops with that community, and we started to build meaningful stakeholder relationships, not just with the clinic, and the clinic committee that was largely now based with community-based organizations, but we also established relationships with other structures inside the community, such as the post office, as one of the structures that they're having some challenges with in the area. So I think broadly those are the key ones. But I think also one thing that we've done quite consistently and have been improving on is our election observer project, where we recruit sort of non-partisan civil society actors in the region and the province to try and ensure that they have sight of what's happening in our elections, that they can also act as an impartial voice in declaring the elections free and fair. And so that's been a project that's been improving year on year as it relates to the quality of the elections.
Yes, and those are wonderful, wonderful, great projects. I'd love to even sit and talk more about them. But with all of that, what is in your experience, in your opinion, what are the significant impacts of democratic participation at local level to enhance these projects? And what are some of those challenges as well, specifically working within a democratic framework?
Yeah, so I think a very significant challenge when we talk about any real meaningful democratic participation is people want to see results sometimes overnight. And so when you engage people in dialogue, they think, okay, now this is going to be resolved by tomorrow. I should have access to this and that. But unfortunately, the democracy is a lot of hard work and it takes time for some things to be resolved. So, and part of those challenges relates to, the fact that people generally don't have access to meaningful employment. They don't have access to a steady income. And so when you ask them to convene outside of some access to an economic opportunity, they think that it's a waste of time or that it's not contributing meaningfully to their livelihood. And I think that's the challenge of keeping people motivated to continue to trudge the journey, as part of it. But ultimately, I think, restoring faith in our democratic institution is a significant win and a gain for us in, as it relates to that. So over time, whilst we might lose people along the way, the people that do stay, become the mouthpieces, that advocate for, people's consistent application of, the sort of democratic principles of participation, dialoguing, and of course, engaging with the stakeholders in a way that is, constructive, and it doesn't destroy relationships, it doesn't destroy infrastructure. And so I think that's been an interesting success as well.
It's a lot of interesting, like, especially now, you know, this week. So these are kind of big concepts, right? So we feel like we understand democracy, and then we say, okay, but we didn't know this was here and this is here. So the DDP does a lot of work, and yourself, on education around elections, right?
Yeah.
So could you give us a brief overview of the election or the voting process just, yeah, because people, there's lots of news going around. You know, there's three ballots, there's this, there's that, there's that. So what is the basic understanding about elections and the voting process?
Yeah. So what's very important at the outset for us to declare is that as people, as citizens of this country, we don't vote for specific people to go into parliament. We didn't in the past, at least. We do now with the advent of independent candidates that could contest. But ultimately, our electoral system is one that says proportional representation. So it means that based on the amount of people that turn out to vote, the vote is split based on the outcome of that turnout. So if someone gets 50% versus someone who gets 10%, it doesn't mean, what that means essentially then is that you will then get access as a political party, for instance, to 10% or 50% of the seats that are available either in your provincial legislature or the National Assembly. So that's the first thing, that we don't generally vote for individuals. In KZN, for instance, there's only one independent candidate that's contesting for the KZN seat, for a seat at the provincial legislature. And so that's the only one that's campaigning for that. I think it's a Mr. Midley. But ultimately, we elect people to represent our interests. We elect political parties to represent our interests in legislatures. And that's how essentially that works. So we don't vote for a president, for instance. We don't vote for a premier directly, but we entrust the task of selecting a president or a premier, for instance, for our province, to those people who form those legislatures and the National Assembly. The differences that are significant for this year's election are sort of threefold. The one is that there's now the advent of independent candidates that are contesting both for provincial legislatures as well as National Assembly. The second one is the number of ballots that have been created in order to ensure that that proportional representation system remains secure. Those three ballots are represented by the national ballot, which is a blue ballot that only has political parties represented in it. The second ballot is going to be the orange ballot the orange ballot, which represents the regional to national. The region is the same as the province. So people who are contesting for a seat in parliament through a region such as KwaZulu-Natal will get access to a certain number of, will be vying for a certain number of seats based on the calculations that are available. And then, of course, you have your pink ballot, which is your provincial ballot. And the provincial ballot includes both independents and political parties on it. So there's a direct competition there as it relates to independents and political parties. So you only get to make one vote in those instances. Those three ballots, you can decide to vote for one party all across. You can decide to differentiate. You vote for someone else in the national one, you vote for someone else in the regional to national, you vote for someone else in province. It's up to you how you choose to make your vote based on your intended needs. The third important change in this election is the Section 24A notice, which is, in the past we used to be able to vote in any voting station. For instance, if you're still in the same in your home province, and maybe you decide to visit a cousin in Ballito, but you're from Durban, you would have been able to get all three ballots in Ballito, and it would have been fine. But for this election, you would have had to notify the IEC prior to, I think, last week Friday, not this previous Friday, but the Friday before, about your intention. I think it was the 17th of May, that was the deadline for Section 24A notices. So for this election, you can only vote where you are registered. And to be able to do so, if you're uncertain at this point, you need to go to the IEC's website and double check where you are appearing, where your name appears on the voter's roll. Otherwise, you won't be able to be given any ballots, including if you're voting in other provinces, you would have had to notify the IEC. Because if you're from a different province and you're registered to vote in a different province, but you're making a Section 24A notice to the IEC, you'd have only gotten, for instance, a national ballot, because you can't impact on the regional and provincial ballots of another province when you're in a different province. But I try to be as short and as to the point as possible, but that's essentially the most significant changes for this election.
Yes. And now with all these changes and with generally there's a sense that voting can be quite scary. Generally with campaigning, it can feel very overwhelming. You know, you're getting lots of information. So what are some of the common misconceptions around elections at the moment that you're finding or that you're encountering with your work around election management and voter education?
Sorry, say what was the question? I apologize, I missed it.
No worries. So I'm saying that it can be quite overwhelming with all the information that we get, right? Especially around campaign season. So what are some of the common misconceptions or even falsehoods that you're finding around the election process?
The first one that's been around for the longest of times is that if you don't vote, your vote gets gifted to the ruling party. That's something that I hear a lot of people say, particularly young people. So that's not true. If you don't turn up to vote, your vote doesn't get calculated anywhere. I think that sentiment comes from the fact that essentially, if you choose not to vote, it's a tacit endorsement of the status quo. So you're happy with whoever wins regardless because you're not willing to make an input. And so it's important for people to go and make their vote so that they are showing either way, whether they're in support of status quo or they want to change, they can be able to make that visible through their vote. That's a very important one. The second one about that's been quite interesting to observe is the rigging, the allegations of rigging and sort of how safe our elections are, essentially. Unfortunately, in this country, we suffer from a distrust in institutions. And so I understand to some extent why there's a concern about the nature of the IEC and its work. And so part of what we need to do as organizations like PDP is reassure South Africans that the availability of stakeholders, the IEC is not the only stakeholder that's involved in the elections. And so it's important that we provide some support and veracity around that. So with us as an organization, for instance, we are election observers, which means we are a non-partisan stakeholder who is observing the process of conducting the elections. We have the ability to say, based on factual evidence, that for the past, like we've observed over 10 elections in this country, we've not observed incidences of vote rigging or vote stealing to the extent that people seem to be talking about. And ultimately, where there were errors, the IEC, through its auditing processes and all of the mechanisms that are available in our laws, have been able to correct some of those. The political party agents are also a part of the system, and so they provide an additional eye because they have a direct interest in the outcome of the elections themselves. And so the IEC is not a body unto itself. It's also regulated by laws. And so if there's factual, verifiable evidence that we can talk to, it's very important that you bring that up, either to the IEC or the electoral court or other stakeholders who can take that forward. And so that's something else that we see quite often, being talked about. The other part, of course, is about the potential for foreign nationals to be able to vote. The law doesn't enable foreign nationals in this country to be able to vote if you're not a naturalized citizen. A naturalized citizen means you might have been a foreign national at some point, but you've applied for permanent residency, having approved that, and then applied for citizenship as well, and you'd have gotten that right. So only naturalized citizens and citizens of birth by birth who are born in this country and are natural born South Africans would be allowed to vote. And so those are the three, I think, major misconceptions that are sometimes see and hear from citizens. But I think maybe a final one is the impact of presiding officers on the election. People complain a lot about teachers being hired as presiding officers, and they're saying why, particularly when teachers are sometimes affiliated to the SATU, the teachers union, which is affiliated also to the African National Congress. They don't trust that process. And an explanation from the IET has been that part of the reason why they have to hire certain stakeholders in high-ranking positions for the election day in particular is because they don't own any venues. So they have to hire out schools, they have to hire out public facilities, and sometimes those public facilities, in order to ensure that you're going to get all of the necessary help, you have to hire a high-ranking individual from that public facility. And so it sometimes ends up being a principal of a specific school. And so that's why it looks the way it does. They understand their implications, and they've made more of an intentional drive this time around to have young people represented as part of the electoral staff on election day. So you'll see a lot of people that are younger in nature that are newer at your election voting station, and especially because a lot of the applications have been done online and they've been able to drive a lot of the traffic via that those mechanisms.
Yes. Okay. So with all of that, we at MUC and a lot of people are going to be voting for the first time this year. So or on Wednesday. So what is your advice to first time voters? What can they expect when they wake up on voting day? What does their day look like?
Yeah. Firstly, try and go with a friend or a family member. Go with multiple people so that when you get there, you're not intimidated by what you find. Because it's possible that political parties have set up their tables outside of the voting station, and that in itself is scary. For sometimes, if you're a first time voter, you get to a voting station itself, you see the SAPS, South African Police Services, as one of the stakeholders who are ensuring safety and security. They might be present in that space, and so when you get it's important to try and get some solidarity around that. So plan your vote if you can. The form this year, it's a double. The national form, national ballot in particular, has two columns. So you can only put an X in one place. Just be aware of that. Even though there are two columns, your X is only required in one part of the ballot. And so that's something that's also quite interesting. But ultimately, this year, the IEC is also using its voter machine device, voter management device, the VMD machine. It's essentially a tablet that will scan your ID and tell you that confirm that you're registered at that specific voting station. When you arrive, you'll get your name crossed off of the voter's roll. You'll be inked, and then you'll be issued with your 3 ballots. When you are at the booth, take your time. Although you would have likely planned who you're going to vote for, mistakes may happen. You are now to be issued another ballot if a mistake does happen. Just let the presiding officer know that ballot that you made a mistake on will be disposed of in a way that is in accordance with the laws, and then you can be able to make a new vote. You can get a new form twice, so you must be very careful about the number of times that you make a mistake. But ultimately, don't rush into the decision. Take your time. We know that there might be a queue. No one's going to force you to leave if you haven't made your time. I mean, made your mark. But of course, just enjoy it. Enjoy the atmosphere, and ultimately take lots of pictures. Not in the booth, of course, not where it compromises other people's personal information, like the voters' roll. But take pictures of the event, commemorate on social media, create community through it.
Yes. Okay, that is all very simple. I understand that. Makes it seem less scary. So thank you so much. I mean, before I let you go, how do you see, how do you see the next 4 years playing out? Do you think the next election is going to change significantly? I know it's a bit far there. We're focusing on this week, but, obviously you've got a lot of experience. You've written, a lot about, local government, civil society involvement. So just generally, what are some of your views on how the election and democratic process is going to continue in South Africa? Do you think it's going to change significantly? What are your general views?
Yeah, I think generally, I'm excited by the diversity of the stakeholders who have become interested in the quality of our election. I think back in the day, it used to be very sort of older generation, very party-oriented people. Now we're seeing a lot more unaffiliated people also be willing to talk more openly about them being undecided, for instance, about who to vote for. They are asking for advice a lot more on social media. They are seeking out experts are interested in analyzing a lot of the people's manifestos, a lot of the political parties' previous past behavior in order to inform their votes. So I'm very excited by that. The interesting thing about the country now is that we're in a space where coalitions seem to be coming through, and they're going to stay with us for a long time. So this specific election will be indicative of how future voting patterns will happen as it relates to coalitions. So this might be a point in time where we test some coalitions and we say we don't like them, and we'll choose to go back to like an established politics that we saw in the past. Or we may say, actually the system is good. We'll fine-tune it in this way and that way. And so I think that's going to be the trend going forward. I hope that we see a lot more young people turn up. I feel like that's where we still need to do a lot more work to mobilize young people to get involved and engaged.
Yes. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're optimistic. That's very, it's always good. You know, the voices we get around elections are, ah, nothing's going to change. So it's good that we have some optimism. And then finally, before I let you go, where can we get in touch with you, with TDP? If we need more information, where can we find it?
Yeah, we are available on social media at DDP Democracy on Twitter and Instagram. On Facebook, we are DDP Durban NPC. And so those are our social media pages. My Twitter is at Pan Jomane, P-H-A Jomane, N-G-O, N-J-O-M-A-N-E. And then, of course, on Instagram, I'm Spamanda, but without any of the vowels. So it's just a consonant of my name.
Okay.
I thought that was quite creative. So.
Yes. Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope you're full of inspiration and all the young people make you excited.
Thank you very much. I hope they make the right choices at the ballot. And by right choice, I'm not prescribing anything. I'm just saying that's a right choice for you. Whatever you hope and dream for your country and your future, I hope that you exercise your voice in that sense.
Yes. Thank you so much. Happy voting week.
Thank you very much. Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.